Welcome to the Relocate Global and Think Global People podcast series on emerging trends in leadership. I'm absolutely delighted to have with me Dr. Susan Shortland, who's going to enlighten us on some of the approaches and solutions that are available to leaders and global mobility professionals in this sphere. I'm your host, Marianne Kerfey, and a writer for Relocate Global and Think Global People. I write about finance, technology, workplace culture, and diversity and inclusion. Sue is a senior lecturer in human resources management at the University of Westminster. Her career spans more than 40 years, during which time she's worked in both the private and the public sectors. She's a chartered fellow of the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development and a senior fellow of the Higher Education Academy. Prior to working in higher education, Sue worked in a managerial role in International Human Resources Management Consultancy at KPMG. Prior to this, she managed the CBI's Employment Relocation Council. Welcome, Sue, and thank you for joining me.
Hi, Marianne.
Today, we're going to look at managing across cultures and about the influence of culture on working practices, on how successful assignments can be, and how to prepare assignees and support them in cultural training, how to help them and their families assimilate into different cultures and understand about the cultures that they're moving to. We'll also look at how culture differs around performance management, working time, work-life balance and well-being, and how this differs from country to country, geography to geography, but also within organisations as well. Relocating to an unfamiliar culture can lead to culture shock, and this can affect the assignee's ability to settle, issues for their family, and issues around productivity. They can be very excited about the move, perhaps disappointed or despondent when it doesn't quite work out how they expected. And these can all be symptoms of culture shock. So it's really important for employees to have the right support before they leave, when they move, and during the assignment as it moves on. And this can make a difference between how successful the assignment is or whether it fails. So Sue's going to help me look at some of these issues and what organisations can do to make an assignment as successful as possible, help employees adapt to different cultures. But I think, first of all, Sue, we probably need to define culture because it's quite a wide term and it means different things to different people and to different organisations.
Yes, there are, if not thousands, I would say, of definitions of culture. But in terms of looking at sort of societal cultures or country cultures, probably the best known definition is the one that comes from a cultural theorist, Gert Hofstadter. And he defines culture as the collective mental programming of people in an environment. And it's a really interesting definition because it's collective. It's a group thing. It's not individual. It's about how we behave in a group. He says it's mental programming, which means we learn our culture. So we learn that from, you know, at a very young age and get our cultural values in place, you know, when we're quite young, probably before the age of 10. It's a people thing. So it's about people. People have cultures and they are there. They protect us in an environment. And the idea is it helps us cope with change and gives us the behaviours that are expected and are acceptable in the societies in which we live. So there's lots of definitions out there, but you know, it's this idea that we learn it as a group of people to protect us in an environment that I think is critical to understanding what culture is all about.
That's a really interesting definition because it sounds as though it's quite nuanced, that it's never explicitly set out or spoken, and that you absorb it and assimilate it as you grow up in a culture, which explains why perhaps sometimes culture shock can be so pronounced for people who move into that culture and find themselves in an organization or in a country where everything is different and nothing feels familiar.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we see these sort of artifacts or symbols of culture all around us. It's things like dress and what buildings look like and what, you know, countries' different flags or organizational symbols or whatever. So you see that around you. But what you don't really understand is what drives it. And those are the sort of basic assumptions and values that particular cultures hold. And they kind of control or drive, excuse me, the behavioral norms. And, you know, these are people don't articulate them. It's incredibly difficult to articulate your own culture, let alone be able to articulate and understand somebody else's.
So what's the role of culture in successful mobility?
Well, really, it's about learning that it is going to be different. And therefore, it is about ensuring steps towards adjustment and towards adaptability. Because at the end of the day, when you go and live in another country or you go and work for a different organization with a different organizational culture, they are not going to change for you. You know, you are going to have to change to fit in with them. And if you like, you know, societally, you're the guest in someone else's country. So you have to learn what is the norms of behavior and what's the right thing to do. So in terms of global mobility, it really is about having some form of preparation and training to understand the culture you're going into. And also, you mentioned culture shock earlier, to, you know, to understand the effect it could potentially have on you and your family when you're moving somewhere different. Because it's not necessarily all going to be rosy and easy to cope with. It can be very challenging and quite demeaning, you know, when you do things that work at home, but they don't work in the country where you're now based.
Yes, and potentially undermine people's confidence as well. So how can teams manage mobility within partnerships or after mergers and acquisitions? Or, you know, what's becoming more common in some countries is joint ventures.
Yeah, this is a big area, because the thing is when you're undertaking joint ventures, partnerships, mergers, acquisitions, and particularly if you're doing this internationally, you've got different cultures that are coming together societally. So you've got different sort of international cultures flowing through into this new venture. But you've potentially got new organizational cultures as well, and potentially different professional cultures, because each professional group has its own culture as well. So there's lots to take into account. And quite often what that means is, I think it means having an open mind and being receptive to the differences and understanding that adaptability is necessary.
And maybe not underestimating the scale of the job ahead as well, because it's one thing to open an office in China, for example. It's another thing to make that work in terms of culture and to assimilate or to make the two parts of the organization work well together, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It takes time. I think that's another thing, is that a lot of Western cultures are very time pressured, and they see things in the short term and they expect an immediate return. And okay, if you've got quite a lot of preparation and training, you can, you know, ease the process, but it's not necessarily going to happen overnight. So you do have to actually accept that things will take time. But it's important to leverage diversity. I think that's why organizations are undertaking these international ventures, because that diversity brings creativity and new ideas. But diversity isn't always easy to manage. Again, you have to listen and take into account different people's value sets.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. So you don't go off to a new country, set up a joint venture and expect it to run the same as it would in London, because actually what you'd be doing then is stifling some of the creativity and diversity that you get from the sort of the local employees.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So how do societal cultures influence policy, assignment management and families?
I think one of the key areas there is thinking about the type of support that you're going to give people before they go abroad. So really, it's about thinking about the preparation and training, as I said, both for the assignee and for the family. But it's also thinking about other aspects of your policies as well. So thinking about your performance management processes, for example, you know, your sort of approach to work-life balance or time, working time, that kind of thing. So you can't necessarily transplant the, you know, exact way you would actually manage work-life balance or flexibility or working time in a different country. Organizations need to think how they're going to prepare people to cope with those kinds of changes.
That's interesting, because actually, in terms of cultural norms, that comes into the work-life balance, doesn't it? Leaving work on the dot at 5 o'clock, for example, is acceptable in some cultures and not in others. Holiday entitlement is different in different countries. And so it's much more subtle, isn't it? It's about how everybody behaves in a society and what you're expected to do. And that may not be the same as the organizational society that you left when you moved to a different assignment.
Yeah, there's lots of countries that have got quite long hours working cultures. So, Japan is one, America is one, the UK, actually, we're a long hours culture. And then you've got other countries like the Scandinavian countries, for example, where there's a much greater focus on work-life balance. And people are less motivated by the money that you get from working longer hours. They're more motivated by having time that's quality time that they can spend with families, for example. So it does affect what goes into the package, what you're actually going to give people. You're right about the holiday entitlements. Obviously, much less holiday entitlement is the norm in America and Japan than would be in Western Europe, such as Scandinavian countries, for example.
Yeah. So it's about understanding their cultural nuances. It's about managing the expectations of the assignee and making sure that they understand both what's expected of them in the job, but also in the society in which they're going to assimilate. So I'm just wondering, that's quite a big ask, really. So what steps do organisations need to take in terms of preparing their employees? How can they train them effectively? And do you think enough is done before people leave?
I think a lot of organisations provide what's known as briefing. So it's like the facts and figures of the country that they're going to. And that provides you with some understanding of, some of the cultural norms. So, you could be told about what culture is going to be like. But that's not the same as adapting yourself to it. So really, cultural training really needs to be much more in depth. It's got to be more involved, where the individual takes part in, for example, simulations where you're actually working with individuals from that country that you're going to on trying to devise solutions to problems and so on. So you can see how things are done differently and get involved in it yourself and actually physically have to make changes yourself. So it's good to, yes, it's good to have the briefing and the facts and figures, the guides and so on that tell you about culture, but it does need to be more of a personal experience, I think, if people are going to adapt successfully.
It's a big financial as well as a strategic investment to send someone abroad. And if when they get there, they and their family experience culture shock and they really don't settle, and either they're not productive or they decide to cut the assignment short and move on, that's a big problem for organisations, isn't it? So I'm just wondering, firstly, how you mitigate culture shock, if it's possible to do so. And when organisations look at returning on investment, are they looking at it holistically? So they might want to save on the costs of some aspects of cultural training, but actually, in the long term, that might end up being an expensive mistake.
Okay, there's a lot of points to unpick in that. The thing about mitigating cultural shock, I mean, not everybody will experience cultural shock, but a lot of people do. And typically, it's perhaps less of a shock if you know it's coming. So part of me will say, well, it's a good idea to provide training on what cultural shock is all about. And people go through stages. So typically they'll go through sort of excitement and, it's great to be here. It feels like a holiday and so on and so forth. But then then they have to deliver and then they have to meet performance targets. And then it becomes quite difficult. And you think, goodness, things aren't working the way I want them to work. And that can lead to depression and despondency. Before people actually learn how to do things and do things effectively, and then they pick up and they go on the upward curve and they eventually adjust. So knowing that that's kind of like normal and it's going to happen to you, that can actually be quite helpful. But not everybody will suffer that. And also, the more moves you make, more likely that cultural shock will be lessened. And your second point really was about return on investment and whether
cost cutting and investment in employees training.
So the issue there about cultural training is it doesn't necessarily have to be hugely expensive is the first point, but it is actually worth it, because if you are not able to manage in the culture that you're going to be in and you struggle, what often happens with international assignees is they don't trust local people to do anything because they don't really understand them. So they end up taking on more work themselves. That is very bad for their work-life balance, their family and their relationships. So that's a problem. And also they can just simply burn out. So that's bad news. So training can actually help facilitate a better sort of productive working relationship with local people. And the other issue is obviously if they really don't settle in the culture and they end up in that stage of, you know, depression and despondency, and they're not able to lift themselves out of it because they can't make that adjustment to the culture, then the assignment is going to fail. And either the employee is going to bump along the bottom in terms of productivity, or they'll give up and come home. So either way, that's an expensive loss for the employer.
I mean, you make a really good point there, which is about performance and sort of settling in, because it's quite a big deal to go and move to a different country, get your children into schools, make sure your partner has another job or is sort of assimilating into the culture as well as you. On top of that, you might also be opening a new office or running a team of local people, or running a new team of people who've been drawn in from different parts of the globe. And the expectation, I think, in our Western culture is that you hit the ground running and you go in and you get everything sorted out straight away and you're performing at a high level immediately. Sometimes that's a bit unrealistic, isn't it? And we need to make an allowance for the adjustment process that's involved in moving to a different culture.
Well, yeah, I mean, it will affect employees' productivity, obviously. So, you know, they're not going to be very productive when they're in some sort of honeymoon stage at the beginning, you know, mega excited about their new environment. And they're also not going to be very productive when they're in a depression stage either. So, you know, it does take a while. So the idea of hitting the ground running isn't terribly, terribly realistic. But also, I think there's an issue about different cultures, because some cultures have a very short-term mentality. So Western cultures in particular, compared with Eastern cultures, which have a longer term time horizon. But there's also the idea of, you know, relationship versus task in this. So Western cultures, we tend to focus on the task. We've got to get this job done. We've got to do it now. We've got to do it quickly. We've got to, you know, make money. But other cultures have a longer term time horizon, but they also believe in relationship building, and they put relationships ahead of the task. And that means that, you know, for the task to be successful, you've got to have built the relationship first, and that takes time. So it is really about thinking about the different sort of aspects of culture and adapting to those. I think you sort of mentioned about, you know, the support that would be needed for that. So it's really a realistic understanding by the employer as to what is required to adjust in order to become productive in the environment overseas.
And that takes us back to some of the issues that we've discussed actually in another podcast, which I highly recommend, which is about managing talent, is that if you're going to have a proper strategy for the talent pipeline, then you have enough time to train your employees and ensure that when they're going, they're properly prepared. Whereas if you're trying to fill a vacancy overseas really quickly, some of these nuances might be lost in the process of trying to get everything done quickly and get the person out there as soon as possible to fill the gap.
Yeah, I think if you've got talent planning in place, you've got the opportunity for developmental interventions going through that actually start building the cross-cultural competencies. So, yes, that's an important point, Marianne. Yeah.
Also, I wanted to talk about reverse culture shock, because I think the idea is you go out there, it's potentially challenging to be in a new culture, but then you come back and it's your home and our definition of home and everything that's familiar. And actually, sometimes assignees find that particularly problematic, don't they? I wondered why that was.
Well, depending on how long you've been away, things move on. So, you know, things have changed sort of economically, politically, socially, and so on. So you're coming back, you expect it to be the same, and it might not be. So that's the first point. But secondly, you probably don't realize it, but if you've adjusted successfully abroad, you've now become sort of culturally competent in a different culture. So you come back and you've got to kind of relearn to operate in your own culture. So whereas, you know, you've gone abroad and maybe relationship building was the key thing to achieving success, and you come back and it's a more task oriented, time sensitive, time critical culture, you've got to sort of put aside what you've learned and revert back. And you might not be expecting to have to do that. You know, you've changed as a person, and therefore you've got to cope again with your own culture, which could have moved on while you're away, but also the fact that you've got to kind of change yourself back into that sort of cultural mindset. So yes, reverse culture shock, it doesn't normally prove to be quite as difficult as the original culture shock going out, but it does take place. And once again, training so that people understand that it might happen to them, probably will happen to them, is an important thing. Because otherwise you come back expecting everything to be the same, you expect things to work well and things don't, and that can affect your confidence and your capabilities on return.
So organisations making employees aware of the effects of culture shock adjustment when they come back, give them appropriate support, give their family appropriate support as well, because I guess the children might have to adapt to a different way of schooling and a different way of perhaps being a young person or a teenager in a new culture.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, when families go abroad, it's quite often that children go into international schools and they're just, you know, wonderfully supportive environments. And then they come back, and I'm not saying that state schools are not wonderfully supportive, but obviously it's a different culture and a different way of, you know, educating to what they might have got used to abroad. So again, you know, children have got to get used to a change in schooling system, a change in curriculum, potentially make new friends again. So it's difficult for them. So yes, they will suffer reverse culture shock. And dual career partners, they come back and they've got to find a work again, enter the employment market and so on. So again, you know, something for them to adapt to as well.
And repatriation challenges are not just for the employee and their family, are they? They're also for the organisation, because there are statistics that show there's quite high employee turnover on return or within a year of coming back. So even if the overseas assignment itself was successful and the employee and their family were assimilated well and enjoyed the assignment, sometimes when they come back, they don't stay with that employer very long and they move on. And just wondered what the reasons for that might be and how organisations might be able to tackle some of those issues.
That's often because the skills and competencies that the individual has gained while they're abroad aren't utilised effectively on return. So in other words, the job might not be suitable, it might not be challenging or stretching enough, and therefore the employee feels as if they're sort of underutilised, and they look for the ability to use their skills and talents somewhere else. So that is, you know, it's very important that employees are given roles on return that make the best use of their international talent. And for employers, it's a very expensive loss. You know, you've spent all this money sending people abroad. When they come back, you want to transfer their knowledge, their capabilities. You want to make the best of their sort of cultural competence that they've gained, maintain links with the subsidiaries abroad, or indeed forge new links with other international partners. And if you find that then the employee comes back and they just leave, clearly some other employer is going to poach them away and gain the benefit of those international competencies. So yes, it's very, very important to ensure that employees are supported on return. The figure is something like about 50% actually of employees leave within somewhere between 1 and 2 years.
That's very high. Yes. Yeah. So in summary, ensuring assignees understand the culture that they're going to and training them and preparing them and their families is a really critical step in making an assignment successful. Understanding that when they first come to the country, they may not be able to hit the ground running. They may need a period of adjustment, and that also they're growing as people and they're starting to understand how things are done differently in that culture. And so then when they come home, they might have outgrown their old job or their old role. And so talent management is a really important part of understanding what that employee needs when they come back, so that you don't just lose them, as you say, within, you know, a couple of years. So any sort of final thoughts on how organisations can manage across cultures effectively?
I think it's just important to remember that cultures are going to be different. And I think it's really important that you consider that. It's important to consider both the transition going out, but also the transition coming back, and think about support that you can give to people during that transition period. Don't necessarily expect people to be productive straight away, either going out or on return, and think about how you might adapt things like your appraisal or performance management processes to reflect that.
Thank you so much, Sue. And as we mentioned in the podcast, there is another podcast about managing talent. We're also looking at diversity, and there's a number of others in the series that you can check out. So please do check out the other podcasts on global mobility and leadership. Thank you, Sue, so much for your time and for joining us. It's been really insightful and interesting.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you.